Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen up. Yeah. I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. You're entry level. You're entry level, baby. You're entry level. Ooh, yeah.
Entry level.
Yo, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I have two guests in the intro today because we just got done disc golfing, which I feel like we're getting pretty good at. Nick Turner is here.
The CDC says no more masks in public, baby.
All right. And then also, where did you get that news? Joe Rogan?
No, the CDC.
But they said outside.
Yeah, if you're vaxxed.
But if you, in a large crowd, they said wear it.
Yeah, I mean outside.
Public, you said public.
Oh, shit, man. Well.
Uh-oh, we're the new Joe Rogan. Don't get vaxxed.
I guess the beginning of this podcast has no momentum. They call it Joe Momentum.
And then our other guest right here, Nick Rutherford.
Hey, it's me, Nick Rutherford, the disc golf champion.
You were not the disc golf champion today.
I wasn't, but last time we played, I was.
You were. We've gotten really into disc golf. It's very fun. If you like disc golf, email in your disc golf stories. We're done with jobs. This is a disc golf podcast.
If you like disc golf, go find a disc golf podcast. This is for people who want to take down their boss.
That's true. We do want to take down our boss. And guess what? Gabrielle Beauregard, she won the t-shirt design. Nick, you're making them. You can buy Fuck the Cave t-shirts.
Yeah.
Also, she emailed and said, I'm a girl.
Fuck?
Yeah. Which I'm.
Why?
Like,
what did we say about her?
I don't know. I think we kept probably mentioning
it. It sounds like a fake name. Gabrielle Beauregard.
But my ex-girlfriend's name was Gabrielle.
Yeah, but it wasn't Beauregard.
And I'm like, well, there can't be two girls.
Your ex-girlfriend was Gabrielle Carteris. From 90210, is that right?
Who?
Gabrielle Carteris.
I don't know.
President of SAG.
Okay, that's exciting. Everybody knows that. Let's do Inside SAG and Disc Golf. That's fun. all right.
Hey, guys, everybody email me their SAG numbers.
NickJTurner@gmail.com. Okay, we had a great week. Guys, the t-shirts are for sale. They're great. They look good. Nick, do you want to talk about the t-shirts and the quality?
You know, I never want to stop talking about these t-shirts. They're beautiful. They're on, I don't think a lot of people know this, no sweatshops.
Okay.
Made in downtown LA.
Wait, the
shirts Bella
that
and
you
canvas,
buy.
100% cotton, eco-friendly.
Okay, great. And then
made
you,
by adults. I went
you,
down there.
You buy them wholesale. You bring them back to your apartment where you have a full t-shirt shop. You have your own sweatshop,
yeah.
But
you're
the only one who works.
Actually,
in it.
I don't buy them wholesale because I don't technically have a real business. So I haven't registered to get a wholesale number, or whatever. Okay. But yeah, I make them in my place, and I almost burned down my house this week.
I believe it.
I melted my floor, my rug, the plug for the dryer,
yep.
And I had to drive to fucking somewhere out. Farther than the airport.
Well, I will say, I went over there while you
got
made the
fixed.
First
yeah.
Gabrielle Beauregard's
yeah.
Fuck the Cave t-shirt,
yeah.
Which they're incredible.
Gabrielle Beauregard.
One. And it was equal parts paint lacquer
sure.
And weed pipes and paraphernalia.
Oh, in my area.
Yeah.
So yes.
It's nothing but you're smoking while making t-shirts.
Well, because the problem is it's kind of off the living room. So while I'm out there, I don't like to have to go all the way to the living room to get my weed. Mm-hmm. So I'll smoke it out there. Also, Lyra is pregnant.
Yep.
So I'm not smoking flower in the place, which is why all my stuff is outside there, because that's where I go to smoke. Not just while I'm working, but all day.
So it's your outdoor area, your smoking area,
yeah.
And your t-shirt shop.
Making money. A lot of people have these outdoor areas. They're not monetizing. And I'm saying, what is wrong with you people? You got to make a business in every square foot. That's why I have a podcast in my closet.
It's very exciting.
On my porch, I have t-shirts.
The t-shirts rock. Check them out.
And check out my Amazon Crime, my Crime delivery shirts.
This isn't Get Rich, Nick.
It doesn't matter. This is big. They dropped. There's two this week.
Okay. Nick made another shirt that's great that
it's
he
incredible.
That we all went out and took photos of. It was a very fun day. It was very nice. You're making shirts. You're, you know, taking down. We're taking down Amazon. Yeah. We're taking down the cave.
Yeah.
This is a podcast for the the fighting man.
Yeah.
You know, the downtrodden.
Sure.
We're the
that's a big cave owner.
We're the John Steinbeck of podcasts over here.
Wow.
Yeah. East of Eden, more like entry level of Eden. Huh? You like that? I didn't love it.
Yeah.
I would cut it if I cut stuff. We do need Rutherford to come in here though. Because we have a dumpster diving email. And guys, guess what? This has stopped being an infomercial. We're going to get back to real emails. Email in your terrible job stories. We have but we're still kind of dabbling in the dumpster diving world. I'll be honest with you right now. But I want to get Rutherford in here real quick.
Yeah.
Where he can discuss his definition of dumpster diving.
Nicholas!
Nick.
Yeah. You're on.
Nick, we need you.
Everyone's waiting for you.
We need you to.
I shouldn't even be here. There's too many Nicks here.
No, there isn't. There's a perfect amount of Nicks in my life. Nick, how do you feel? I know you listen. You're a loyal listener.
Yeah.
But in case you haven't been listening the last few months, we've mostly focused on dumpster diving.
Oh, I used to dumpster dive.
Are you serious? Yeah.
But not for food. You're talking about for food dumpster diving?
Well, yeah.
I used to like, anytime there was a dumpster outside of home, me and my brother would climb in and pull out like old TVs and stuff.
What?
Yeah, I used to like pull.
When
I was like a teenager, when I was like in middle school and high school.
So you were a full dumpster diver.
Yeah, I loved it. I remember like there was this one, they were redoing this building, this huge dumpster in the back, and all these like old security cameras and stuff, and I just grabbed them all. I think I thought I would put them back together at some point.
Yeah.
Never did.
Okay, well, most of the people emailing in are dumpster diving.
For food.
Like outside Little Caesars or outside McDonald's.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And stuff like
hey,
that.
Hey, that's, if you.
It's just called good business.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. If you have to do that, you do that.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
We have this week's email. It's from, he wants us to call him Kevin. It's not his name. And I don't know why he wants alter ego, because he didn't do anything really that illegal here.
Yo, if I was coming up with a fake name, it would be like Rocket or something.
Okay.
Or Jazzy. Kevin? That's his name. That's all I'm saying. This dude's name's Kevin.
All right. And if you've ever hear any other podcasts where a alter ego comes in with the name Jazzy.
It's always like Blaster.
You know
or
it's Nick Turner. All right.
Fisto.
So from Kevin, he goes, hey, Brooks and Nick. It works for Nick Rutherford. You can call me, quote unquote, Kevin. And I have a combination dumpster diving / stealing from work story for y'all. Love it. Love it. You're combining the two things we want.
I'm in.
Stealing from your job. And dumpster diving. At my old job at a popular pharmacy chain, we're just going to go with Walgreens. Absolutely. We would have to dispose of out-of-date product. Food in particular had to be disposed of a week before it expired, so we'd fill garbage bags with random food like Oreos, Skittles, and juices. This is incredible. You got the inside scoop on what you're throwing out, and you know it's not bad.
At that point, you're not dumpster diving; you're dumpster filling.
Yes.
You're the top of the food chain.
You're throw that in my car. Okay. So at the end of the night, we would toss this quote unquote garbage in our dumpster, and I had an idea since I was in college at the time to bag the food separately and put it next to the garbage. Our man's a goddamn genius.
That's smart.
Now he's not even dumpster diving. He's dumpster grabbing. He's not getting in there. At no point is he doing a dive.
He's going around the dumpster altogether.
Yeah. He says, after a few months, when the bags were a little light on food for me and my roommates, I would add stuff and just say it was expired. So now he's literally, this is great. You're going, he's like a supermarket sweeping Walgreens with just things he wants that he's got to throw away because it's expired. I love this. This is fantastic. This is the type of emails we want, Kevin. Taking down the big business.
I like that.
If you ever, this is a little hack. If you ever go to an expensive restaurant and like you're like, wow, these prices are insane. Ask your waiter for the expired steak, and it's usually much cheaper.
Okay.
Little hack.
Mm-hmm.
Try it. Try it out. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. You think I don't do this?
What restaurant do you do this at?
TGI Fridays. All right. I used to work there. That's why I know it works.
Are you being for real?
Yeah, go check it out.
I don't.
It's a real thing. They call it last day steak. You could say, I'll have your last day steak.
Yeah, they say, you ask for the Thursday steak.
When it's the following Wednesday. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's easier Fridays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get it.
Okay.
Yeah. I want people to hear you laugh at your joke.
I am my biggest fan, and that's important to this industry.
It is very important. Okay. He said, my biggest haul was 2 30-gallon trash bags full of food and drinks, which we threw a party with. Love the show. This is incredible. Not only are you stealing, you're Robin Hooding.
Yeah.
You're stealing from a corporation and you're giving to your friends. This is a good guy. Look, quote unquote, Kevin, a.k.a. Jazzy.
Okay, let me.
I don't know why you need a fake name. What you did is.
That's what I'm saying. What is the twist? Who did he kill? Because why is he going under a pseudonym?
I don't understand.
All right.
And look, when you email in these incredible stories where you are only a hero, let us say your full name. Okay? You deserve that shout out. Social Security, your address, everything. Give it all. Guys, get the frickin' shirt. There's an official Fuck the Cave shirt. It's by Gabrielle Beauregard. She's a wonderful lady. She's definitely a graphic designer. And it looks good. I love it.
Looks real good. So much paint on that thing. Yeah. As that's what I see now. Mm-hmm. It's like when musicians hear a song and they're like, you know, I could tell they had a cold that day or whatever.
Yep.
Every time I look at that shirt, I just think, that's so much paint. You're getting so much paint for your dollar.
Yeah, I watched Nick make one. And he goes, "Ooh, this is sticky."
So okay. As somebody who doesn't screen print, if I just had a square of a block of color, what would that be? That's too much paint.
No, it's fine.
Hold on, you need to talk.
It's fine. It just it really sticks to the screen because it's just there's just tons of paint on it, which is fine. It's just, you know, it pops out and it's all good. I don't know though. I would be nervous to make that. Mm-hmm. You know,
but this Fuck the Cave shirt is fantastic.
Beautiful.
Get one. They're great. Proceeds. We decided also, this is big news. If you want the Brooks Wheelan, You Can't Die If You Never Stop Living shirt, 100% of the proceeds of that goes to Nick Turner.
Also, if you want that image on anything specific, you can mail me that. You can email me at nickjturner@gmail.com. And if you want it like on a jacket, like if you got a cool jacket, you want that image on the back, Fuck the Cave image, you can mail me that jacket. I'll put it on there and I'll mail
wow.
it back to you.
Wow.
What are you charging for that? $300,
$400? $25.
Wow. Wow. Plus shipping. Wow. Okay. This turned back into an infomercial.
So you're losing about $275 okay. per mailed item.
I'm doing it for money. I'm not doing it for money. I'm doing it for comedy.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, every once in a while, we got to sell some baseball cards in this thing. Get the shirt if you want. But what I was saying is the Fuck the Cave shirt, we are splitting profits.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah. You're going to get $10 every time they sell one.
Nuts, guys. If you buy one of those shirts, that's $10. That's supporting the podcast. Which also, by the way, another way you can support the podcast is join the Patreon, which now me and Mike Burns, who lives in Michigan, have been doing a weekly catch-up on there if you want to hear Patreon exclusive where me and Burns catch up.
Also, if you want Brooks to not make any money on the shirt, email me. You can Venmo me directly, and I'll do it on the side. And so I'll get to keep all of it. That's an option.
Very exciting. Very fun. Very fun. All right. Well, listen to Get Rich, Nick. Rutherford, what do you got?
I want to make a shirt. I got to get in on this shirt business.
Get in on the shirt business.
Yeah,
you got a shirt guy.
So I'm talking to you directly right now, the listeners. I want you to give me a great idea for a shirt.
You can't do this. You have to make 180 episodes of a podcast before you can be like,
okay. Bonks away.
No.
Right.
I never, ever edit. I'm going to edit that out.
If you do, make it
bonks
really sloppy.
Bonks away.
Bonks away.
No,
you're
I
not saying
like
it right.
One bit. Guys, get a shirt. It's dope. You got a Fuck the Cave shirt. People are confused. It's super fun. And if you're into disc golf, email in. Tell us your terrible job stories. And guess what? Guess who we got this week? This is just a taster. Sometimes I feel like the intro is so good, this should be the podcast. But we have a better situation coming up. Turner, do you know who I have for guests this week?
Gareth Reynolds from The Dollop.
I got him.
Yeah, I did know who it was this week.
Yeah, because I told you in the car right over here, and you said, that's a big get.
Yeah, you usually aren't excited, but you told me earlier.
I'm very excited. I can't wait. I love The Dollop. If you're not familiar with The Dollop, it's great. Check it out. And you know how I got Gareth is one of you listeners tweeted, hey, Brooks, you should have at Gareth Reynolds on entry level. I reached out. I said, I'd love to have you. He said, that sounds great. So, dudes, anybody you want on this podcast, reach out to me and tag that person in
Seinfeld
the tweet.
Seinfeld doesn't have a Twitter. What am I supposed to do?
Well, I'll call him.
Okay.
Great. It's super fun. Guys, get the shirt. Join the Patreon. And if you don't want to do any of those things, leave a 5-star review and a comment that just says, this show rock and rolls. And enjoy your week. Hey, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I'm here with Gareth Reynolds. Gareth, what's up?
Hey, Brooks.
So right before we started, Gareth was saying, so the reason you're on, because we don't really know each other that well, I'm just a fan. Somebody on Twitter tweeted that you should come on. And then I was like, yeah, of course. And you're like, that's weird. That's a secret I do to get guests. I tell people to tweet at people they want on. And then
That's very smart. That's smart. Because I think that is true. Like I, you know, we don't know each other well, but yeah, like I'm a fan of yours. And so you never think about it. And that's, and it was also sort of awkward for if you were to, like, I would be fine with it, but it would be a little more awkward. Whereas it's way better if someone's like, hey, I'm this guy.
It's so easy. I mean, it's, so people who listen to this podcast, it works. It works great. Yeah. Cause I'm like, yeah, I also like that person. I just don't have their phone number.
Well, it's bad. I mean, that's your producer. Twitter's your producer in some way. You know?
It's me. You're right. The people who listen are my producers. How's it going, man?
Pretty good, man. How about you?
It's fine. I mean, good. It's almost, COVID's over, I think. So it's
ish.
Exciting.
COVID-ish over, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, don't ask Michigan, but according to here.
Jesus, yeah. That one's crazy. It's weird to me that it's weird to, like, I've been thinking about this lately. I'm a very liberal person, and I just have to say that Florida, like, there are certain states where it's just.
Yeah. I said last.
I don't know what's happening, but
I said on the last podcast, if we have another global pandemic, I'm going hard conservative because those guys won. They absolutely won. I'm not changing anything. I'm doing I'm going to the beach.
Yeah. And then, like, I mean, Cuomo hurts the whole argument about having a Democrat in charge is really hurt by Cuomo. But yeah, what's happening in Michigan is nuts.
It's insane.
I don't know. It's, I mean, the whole thing has just been like the idea that it seems like nobody had any fucking clue what to do. It was like jazz.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole time. It was just like, we'll find it out there. It's like,
what are you talking about? Yeah. Somebody was like, I was on some other podcast. They're like, do you think the news, since the news is like, you know, plummeted our consumption of the news, do you think it'll ever get back there? And I'm like, I don't feel, and I hope, this is all hope, that a global pandemic will be happening while the president is inciting an insurrection.
It was like very Venn diagram time.
So many crazy things that happened that I was like, I don't think I hope I never have to watch the news like that again.
Well, did you see the thing with the, I don't even remember what the group is, but they recorded a CNN producer. They just released it, I think, yesterday or today.
I saw something about CNN is like canceled or something, whatever.
It's one more time. We're going to do it. And basically the producer is just going like, oh yeah, climate change is the new thing we're going to scare people with. And he's going on all this stuff. And I was like, well, part of me was like, man, fuck CNN, obviously, because it's just such ratings cocksuckery. But then the other part of me is like, well, why when the one thing that I actually give a fuck about is coming up, like, and they're going to use fear tactics, are they busted? Like, I would have loved to see the 5 years where they just like beat the drum of like, man, we're fucked. You know, I'd be like, oh, finally.
Yeah, no, you're right. They picked the wrong thing to get busted. I wish they were like, all right, we're going to scare them about, I don't even know, like a thing that doesn't matter to me. Like, you're like.
Yeah, well, it's just like, it was my turn. Like, because they've been banging the Trump drum for, it was just like for the, it's all such fluff and uselessness. And then the idea that there would be actually be one thing that maybe, and now they can't.
That's real. The thing that's real. Yeah. I wish they were like, all right, we're going to scare them with dinosaurs coming back. Like, scare them with that.
Yes.
But like, we're going to scare them with facts and science.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. They're like, we're finally going to be honest. And that's all he would have had to say too. Instead of we're going to scare them with it, just be like, yeah, we're going to be honest about climate change.
We're going to actually tell them what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And people lose their minds. But you're right. It is just it is just coming out of the weirdest time, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So if people don't know Gareth, he's a very funny comedian, but you also host a podcast that I really binged on a trip to Santa Fe and back called The Dollop, which is
great because my problem with podcasts about, I love history podcasts. They're fucking boring and you found a great niche.
Yeah. So it's not, yes, thank you.
It's just like a really, you guys just go through unique historical moments and then you're funny about it instead of dry, which is really great. And then I like listening to the ones I know a little bit about. So I'm like, exactly.
I got
real heated up when you guys did the Burke and Wills expedition about the one in Australia.
That one is we've done a lot and there's not a ton that I'm like, oh yeah, that one is just, I'll never forget that one.
That's one of the craziest. It's like, well, from my point of view, it's just like, what if it's the Australian Lewis and Clark, where Lewis and Clark, one guy died right away and he was old. That one, everybody.
Man, is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is the one at one point where someone just goes like ice crazy and just bites off their finger. And like another guy is just like, oh my God. There's, like
there's three of them left and one of them eats all the food. And it's clear which one did it. So then they beat him.
It's just fucked up.
Yeah.
It is. It really, like, we have, you know, and it happened like very organically. Like, we didn't go in being like, you don't know anything about history. Dave knows a ton and we'll just try to lighten it up. But, you know, the stories that he pulls and finds, the guy that I do the show with, he just finds the craziest shit. And it's so, it's a luxury as like a comedian who likes doing improv to just sit there and absorb these fucking crazy stories, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you have, I love Dave Anthony, but you have the cush part of that job. It's so great. You have the best job.
I like when we are like on tour, I like fake how hard my job is to just kind of level, you know what I mean? I'll be like, man, my brain is exhausted from all, you know, like, even though I'm like, I'm fine, let's go get beer. You know? I'll just do it because he spent 20 hours writing this thing and I hear it over two and make jokes. And then both of our jobs are done and we split a paycheck.
The one that got me hooked for listeners, if you want to go like dabble, was you did a two-parter on Ronald Reagan, which like was fucking shocking to me. I was like, Ronald Reagan's bad. I didn't know he was evil.
I even knew he was kind of evil and was still like, what the fuck? I mean, it's amazing when you peel the onions on some of these people that you think you know.
Yeah.
And then you just go, oh my God, it's always worse. I mean, we did a two-parter on Trump and it was pretty much the same. I mean, it was while he was president. And so you feel like, I mean, I watched the Netflix series. I mean, I felt like I was pretty informed on what a shitbag Trump was.
I haven't listened to that one because I thought I knew, because I knew exactly what you're saying. I watched the Netflix thing. I hate him. But you're saying it gets crazier.
If memory serves, there was just, there's so much shit, like the stuff with Ivanka and Marla Mate, like there's just a lot. I mean, there's just a lot to the guy and there's just a lot of shit, but it certainly at the time, I might be wrong. We might all be out there now, but at the time I was like, nobody's talking about some of these elements.
That's
crazy. You know, it made me feel so much more worried because it was pretty much at the start. It made me feel so much more worried for about, you know, what we were about to kind of go through.
Yeah. Yeah. I never worked with him. But a lot of my friends did at Saturday Night Live right after I left. And they were more concerned than anybody I knew because they're like, he's a really dumb. He's not haha dumb. Like he's scarily dumb.
Yeah. I mean, and it's been proven over and over again, I think. Yeah.
I was talking the other day of like, dude, like, you know, at least there's light at the end of the tunnel, COVID's and then we'll get to the podcast, but like if he was still president, it might still be we might not have vaccines yet. You know what I mean?
Like I said, I'm left. So voting for Joe Biden was a move to the right for me.
Oh, dude, that's what I tweeted when somebody was like, Joe Biden did this. I was like, did we forgot Joe Biden's a Republican?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were a couple of things that were minor and they were all so nightmarish that I was like, yeah, I'm being scared into voting for him. So I will do that. I guess that's how it's shaken out. Fuck this system. But I will play the game one more time. Yeah.
He would be like, you don't get vaccines. You didn't vote for me. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And just, I mean, again, like, look, the presidents lie. They all lie. Like, we've talked about, like, how we should do an Obama one because Obama's so full of shit.
Yeah, you should. He's nuts.
He's nuts. But you cannot. Just actually hearing like kind of the information of what's going on with COVID is just kind of enough. That's how starved we've been that we're now we're just like, that'll do. I just want to go outside again and hang out.
Yeah. The bar is low for
everything. Low.
Everything. All right. So check out the Dollop if you haven't. It's fantastic. I really like it. It burned a lot of time on a road trip. It was very nice. But that's not what this podcast is about. This podcast is before the top, before it all happened. Gareth Riddle, yes. Where are you from?
I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, born and raised.
Okay. I didn't know that. I'm from, I've been to Summerfest. I saw Tom Petty there. It was pretty cool.
I have seen a lot of concerts at Summerfest, not Tom Petty. So
yeah.
Kudos, Brooks.
It was, well, okay. Quick story about how I got to see Tom Petty at Summerfest, which this will all track for you. My friend lived in Wauwatosa.
Sure.
So like, we'll go, we're underage. He's like, we wear cargo shorts. And then we duct tape bottles of vodka behind our thighs.
Okay, great. Wow, great.
So those are immediately confiscated. They are like,
okay, they're good. They are good. I've tried to sneak in things at Summerfest. Yeah, that's good tactic though. That's nice.
They're like, these 18-year-olds are waddling in.
Yeah, it's hard. The sneaking liquor is hard.
So okay, so we think also we're gonna scalp tickets because Pearl Jam was opening for Tom Petty.
Okay.
And we're like, we'll go see Pearl Jam, Tom Petty. We'll scalp tickets out there because they're sold out. We each brought maybe $30.
Perfect amount. You got vodka, $30, and a dream.
$30 for Pearl Jam and Tom Petty. Sure. We get there, people are like, you know, $500. We're like, what? So we go to position ourselves to try to like listen from next to a fence.
Oh, man.
Pearl Jam only plays an hour. That really upset, like, I don't know, 40 people. So they storm out because they want, I don't know who these 40 psychos are that like Pearl Jam, but not Tom Petty. I didn't know that existed.
Yeah. Yeah. An hour seems pretty, I mean, it's not crazy, but it's pretty good too.
They were like, we want more Pearl Jam. This is fucking shit. I'm not watching
Tom Petty. Tom Petty. Nobody likes Tom Petty.
Everyone likes Tom Petty. So they're storming out and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because it's still like, you know, the ticket, like, I was like, can I have your ticket? And the guy's like, I don't know, $5. So we buy their tickets and we go in for all of Tom Petty.
Great.
And guess what? Eddie Vedder sings like 10 songs with him.
Oh my God. You win.
Dude.
Did you get booze?
Oh yeah. We still figured that out.
Yeah. Underage drinking at Summerfest was very difficult, but it was achievable.
Okay, so either way, I love Milwaukee. Like, you know when you just have like one good time and you're like, I don't care how racist that city is, it rocks.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about Milwaukee.
Yes, Summerfest is awesome. I agree with you. Yes, it's a great town.
Okay, I'm done telling stories. Gareth's stories. So what was growing up in Milwaukee like for you?
It was great. I was raised by English parents, so it was kind of strange looking back on it. But I really liked it.
Like straight from England?
Yeah, immigrants. Yeah, they moved probably about 6 or 7 years before I was born.
Okay.
And they had another child. So my brother was so English. And then so I was kind of incubated in this English household and then sort of like let out into the wild of the white trash brown deer Wisconsin area where I grew up and started to, you know, adapt, get Z's in the side of my head, shave the eyebrow a little bit. So grew a mullet. So adapted properly. But I loved it. I really did. I mean, the cold was the only thing. But as far as like growing up, it was a great place to grow up.
Dude, I grew up in Iowa,
same. Yeah, brutal.
Summers in the Midwest are the greatest fucking thing in the world. Like,
well, you know what's fucking funny is that they did try Winterfest. So Summerfest, what you're saying, is a celebration of, hey, we can come out. It's not, you know, negative 50 anymore. And then they tried Winterfest for like 3 years, but it didn't work for the reasons that you'd think of, which is that it's like, you know, with the wind chill, sometimes it's negative 75. And so
yeah.
Like, come on, make ice sculptures. You're like, my daughter's dead. Dare you? This is a horrible concept.
Oh, man, this is great. Okay, so you grew up in Milwaukee. It's chill. It's fun Milwaukee's times. What's the first job you had?
Really the first job I had was working at a place called Comedy Sports, which was kind of the only comedy club in town at the time. It was improv.
Yeah.
And I started doing Comedy Sports in high school, and then a couple of my friends worked there. And as they went on to college, they kind of ingratiated me in there. So the first job I had was I was a ballet parker with a B at Comedy Sports, where I wore a tutu and I would direct cars to spots and spin around the parking lot. And I was like 16, 17. And it was just the fucking greatest job.
Yeah. And also I could not have, like, you say that, and knowing Comedy Sports, which I'll have you describe, I'm like, I hate it. Makes complete sense for Comedy Sports.
Yes. It totally does. Well, and I remember going there for birthday parties and being like, man, fuck the ballet parker, you know? And And then 5 years later, I was like, right here, ma'am. It was crazy. But Comedy Sports was basically sports themed competitive improv. So whereas Whose Line Is It Anyway was sort of, you know, four people just working on getting points. This was like you wore sweatpants, you wore like sporting attire, you did the show on AstroTurf, and there was a scoreboard and there was a referee, and it was all clean. So it was super weird.
Yeah, that's insane. And like, so why did you, like, how'd you get into improv so early? Like, what, how did you land that at 16? That's like a fucking dream gig.
You know, I was really lucky that a friend of mine's older brother would always have his friends over, and I would hang out with my friend, and, you know, they would beat the shit out of us and shoot us with BBs like when we were younger. And then once I got to high school, one of them, who, you know, didn't beat us up as badly, sort of approached me. And now that we were kind of like both in high school, he said, you know, you really should think about coming out for this. And that was, you know, my freshman year. I got really lucky, like, a number of times with people just simply being like, you should do this. And just like, as a simple-minded person with no clue what to do, would just be like, okay. And then we just start. And that's basically what happens. Then I started doing like high school Comedy Sports. Then I started working there, and then eventually started doing like pro shows there when I was a little bit older for a couple of years. And dude, it was
that's wild. So when you're the ballet, any wild stories of that, or people kind of were chill because they knew where they were coming?
No, you would get a bunch of shit. You would get some people who just were like what you and I were when we first went there, who were like, this guy's a tool, like, I'm going to ignore him and park wherever. That happened. I made good tips. I really, like, I mean, yeah, I was like 16 or 17. Like, women would approach me. And it was just the first time that that had ever happened. And, like, you know, I was in a ballet tutu and was spinning around, but still, like, a few girls would come up to me and just give me their phone numbers and shit. Or I'd get phone numbers in the tip box and stuff. And it was crazy. I mean, I was like, I don't think I ever capitalized on it, because I was like, I don't know how to handle this. Yeah. I simply don't know what to do.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah, yeah. But it was great, man. It was, and the best story I had there was one time, I'll tell it very quickly, but basically I would make tips, and I told one of the guys I worked with, I would give him all my tips if he pissed his pants in the parking lot. And he did. And it still is one of the funniest things I didn't know what to expect. It was me and one of the cooks, and we were just watching, and there's so much great about it, but the delay was the best part, that he was like, oh yeah. And I was like, I think he's lying. And then you just see it 10 seconds later. I mean, and then he got in trouble. And then the guy who ran the place saw it. It just goes, Dave, what the fuck? Go shower. But it was like that. I mean, you know, being a teenager, like working around these older comedians, older improv guys, was so helpful. And even their depression was inspiring almost.
Yeah. Okay. I have a Midwest piss pantsing story about Chicago.
Let's go.
It was an older comic. It was like 4th of July. It was the stand-ups all decided to have, I'm like 20, and we all decide I'm invited to go to the comedy fucking barbecue on Lake Michigan.
Right.
And they're like, you getting in? And I'm like, no, it's too cold. The water's too cold. And then this comic I really respected, he's like, you just force it. Then he pissed his pants, and I goes, now I gotta get in. And so then everybody was like, it was a way to, like, I can't not get in now. That's how it is cold, but if I don't get in, I have piss pants.
He Field of Dreams'd his swim. He built it and he had to go.
Yeah.
He had to take this passionate step and and paint himself into the corner.
And then it just turned into, you know, 30 to 40 people all pissing themselves on Lake Michigan. Like, insane. Midwest people, Midwest comics are nuts.
By the way, that's probably safer to be in your own urine than the actual water in Lake Michigan. It's smart. Safe. Yeah.
That's great. That's super fun. Okay, so you gave him your tips. He got in trouble. I like all of this. Mm-hmm. And then you graduate up to working there? I mean, that's like so quick to already have like a paying job in comedy. That's awesome.
It was crazy. And it was, yeah. And then I quickly like started hosting where I'd come up with a character. So like I'd dress up like some, you know, character I'd come up with. And then a couple of shows, like a couple of professional shows, someone would drop out and I would be like, you know, 17 or 18. And they would just say, hey, can you do a show tonight? Can you do the second show? And I mean, I looked when I was 17 or 18, I mean, I honestly looked like 14 still. Yeah. So it looked super weird. And certainly some of the people who were there were like, fuck this, you know, which I understood. But yeah, I didn't even really realize how lucky I was to have that until I kind of got away. And the thing was that in my head, I was like, I'll just stay in Milwaukee and do this, because to me, the people were rock stars. And then it wasn't until one of the guys there, this guy Joe, just sort of said, like, you know, if I could be you right now, I would get the fuck out of here and go somewhere and do something. And it just really stuck with me, you know?
Wow. That's huge. Cause Milwaukee does, I don't think I've ever done stand up in Milwaukee.
Well, they just opened the Laughing Tap, but yeah, before that they had Comedy Cafe. And then the only other game was really in, I can't remember the name of it, but it was the Skyline in Milwaukee somewhere. I can't remember where it was, but yeah, the Comedy Cafe even was kind of weird. So it wasn't, there really was not a lot of stand up. Otherwise I might've gone that way. It was just that Comedy Sports was the first thing I found and just fell in love, you know?
That's okay. So you're making money doing that. That's where do you leave? Do you leave after Joe tells you to leave, or do you go to college?
I go to college. I in conjunction with a woman who was running the theater department at my school, who kind of also had come to me and said, you know, she was like, you can go places, you know, you can audition and get out of here. And that was kind of, you know, within the same year that I talked to him. And so this drama teacher, Miss Woodard, essentially just kind of like helped me come up with a plan. I mean, I really would not have left. And then a couple of people really were just like, you know, gave me the instructions on how to get out of there.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then, so I ended up going to Chicago where you had pissed your pants with a bunch of your friends at one point. Yep. And
people I really respect.
Yeah. That's a lot of great people.
Very, very successful people in movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that shows you they don't care. You know, that's the attitude. So I went to Chicago and I auditioned for like 10 schools. And then, long story short, I ended up getting into Emerson. And then I went to Emerson, which kind of was the next chunk.
Okay, cool. So you moved to Chicago. I was barely there. I only lived there.
I didn't even move there. I went there to audition for 2 days for all the schools because they didn't go to Milwaukee.
Oh, wait. Emerson's, because where is Emerson? Is that it? That's East
Coast. Boston. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I was like, I was about to be like, I did not know Emerson was in Chicago. I
have good news, Brooks.
I have no guys who went to Emerson. I asked them about Boston, and I guess they just let me get away with it.
Yeah, Boston's a great town, buddy. Anyway, I got to move. See you later.
Okay, so that's cool. Yeah. What's that like? What's Emerson? Explain Emerson, I guess.
It's a liberal arts college, and, you know, it's... it's just filled with people, you know, I mean, a lot of Emerson people move to LA and you just kind of don't hear the end of it because I think, you know, there's a lot of creative people there, which can be great but could also be extremely annoying.
I mean, when I moved here, there was always we call it the Emerson house, and it was just fun house filled with nothing but Emerson dudes. And they were all very outgoing but you didn't hear the end of it.
Yeah, there's like, they call it like the Emerson Mafia, which does make throw up go into my mouth. but it was pretty great to go there because there were so many like-minded people. The school itself is not, at least for me, was not super helpful, but very similarly to the way that, you know, just stuff had played out for me before, there were just a couple of people in the dorms in the first few days who just said, you should audition for comedy troops. And I didn't even really know anything. They said where to go. And I just went and did it and then got into one of those and then just started doing that, you know?
Okay. What was the name of that comedy troupe?
It was called, well, it was called the Swollen Monkey Showcase, but it was like a name that was inherited. And then I actually talked to some Emerson students a couple weeks ago and they informed me they changed it to Swomo, which was like, which makes so much more sense because the name was horrible. You tell people the name and they'd be like, I'm not going to go to that show. And you'd be like, I didn't name it.
Yeah.
But it was called the Swollen Monkeys. And it was spelled with two L's. It was just, it was very dumb.
It's also weird to be like, we don't want to mess with the legacy of the Swollen Monkey Show.
It's too precious. This tradition. Yeah.
The rich.
Yeah, but it was like, yeah, yes. It's, but it was. It you know, been around for whatever, 15, 20 years. So,
okay,
so cool. Right away I was doing that. And I was like, okay, this is great.
You went from fun drinking. You went from one like kind of secret racist drinking town to an openly racist drinking.
It seemed freeing for a lot of people. It was nice to see. It was like, all right, okay, all right, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So,
but it was a good transition because it was sort of similar. Go ahead, sorry.
Were you doing anything for money while you were at Emerson?
Yeah, I did. I got into auditioning pretty quickly.
Oh, shit.
There, yeah. I don't even really remember how it happened, but randomly got called in for a thing. Went in. And then the casting director was just cool. And so she would call me in for stuff, but I never booked anything. I booked a lot of voiceover. So I would do a lot of like radio spots and things like that. So that was partially how I supplemented the income. And then I was a host at Legal Seafoods for a couple years.
Whoa. Okay. Legal Seafoods from a guy from the Midwest. I thought it was like, it still is great, but like, I was blown away that we could just go there for lunch. You know,
yeah.
Like, I fucking love Legal Seafoods.
It was so popular. And I didn't really know, like, it wasn't the best because I went through their training where they're like, this is the greatest restaurant on earth. And I was like, wow, I'm inspired.
Yeah.
And so I did that for a couple years hosting. And then the main job I had, and especially right after I graduated, I worked for a while, was I would valet park. And I just valet park. So I went from ballet to valet.
Nice.
Dropped the tutu, got a tie, you know, went mainstream.
It's kind of fun that someone's like, you got to grow up. And you're like, fine. Yeah, I'll be a valet now.
Or I go to the interview and I have a tutu. I'm hiding under the desk realizing what the job is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I bring my own.
Yeah, I grew up, Dad. I'm not a ballet. Yeah. Fuck you.
It's with a V now, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's crazy. Where were you valet parking? And did you get to drive like any, as a valet, any like wild, you're like, I can't believe you're trusting me behind the wheel of this.
Yes, many times. It was called Ultimate Parking. It was, I don't even know if it's still around, but it was amazing because, you know, it was just like 350 employees. They had a monopoly on the city. They charged $15-16 for a valet. This is, you know, in 2002. So they charged exorbitant prices. I remember the first time I drove a BMW 745i and it was the first time I saw the push button start and I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah.
But then eventually I went and I ended up running the valet at this really fancy place, like real Boston-y place where Kennedy used to eat and shit, called Lockober in Downtown Crossing. And it was the sweetest gig because there was this cop there named McCarthy, obviously, and Officer McCarthy. And he would just let me illegally park the cars on the street in Downtown Crossing. So my job was so easy. But yeah, they would drive up in, like, there was one guy who always had a Ferrari. And he would always drive up, but I didn't get to drive him too far because it would be to the street. But every now and then I'd take him for a little bit of a loop. Like if it was a Ferrari or like an Audi TT, which is my favorite car, if it was a stick Audi TT, I would go take that for a little spin, you know?
Dude, that's wild.
And it was great money. And it was like, it was a good job. I mean, it really, like when I look back on all the jobs I've had, that's the one where I'm like, I could do that still. I could do that job and not like lose my mind.
I have that. I feel that way about working at a small movie theater. I loved it. It was so fun.
Yeah.
It was like independent theater. I was like, that's the best job I ever had or ever will have.
Yeah, and there's something that is, you know, you miss when you get into the line of work that we're in, where there's just the consistency. You have a consistent schedule and you know what you're going to make and that sort of stuff. And while I prefer this version, it is far more stressful, whereas the valet job was just like fucking point A to point B, just, you know, super straightforward. Loved it.
So you graduated college and you stayed in Boston for a little bit then.
Yeah, I needed to make enough money to move out to LA. So, so I had a girlfriend at the time who was finishing school. So then I ended up working basically 7 nights a week. I would work 6 at the Lockober place. And then Sunday nights I worked at this bar down the street from me and just valeted for them. And when I was working at Lockober, I would train people. So I get an hourly rate when I train people. And then I would just make tons of tips. I mean, the tip money was fantastic.
Dude, that's awesome. Any scratches you got to deal with, anybody wrecking when they're valeting, or clean slate?
I never wrecked a car. It wasn't uncommon though. A friend of mine would scratch cars who worked for me, but the best one was when I was probably like year one in the company, and you'd basically bump locations. So you'd go like Thursday, I'm here, Friday, I'm here, Saturday, I'm here, Monday, I'm here, you know. And it was one of these places, I don't even remember what it was called, but Rick Pitino was the coach of the Celtics at the time, and everyone knew Rick Pitino was fucking crazy. And this guy valeted Rick Pitino's car and just had stopped paying attention or something, and had Pitino's car basically scraped two other cars as he was taking it to the garage. And instead of finishing the job, he just basically pulled it over and he came over and quit just because he was like, this is just crazy. This will be crazy. And he just quit. And then they bring a manager out. And so the manager would be there to greet the person whose car got fucked up. But the guy didn't even care. The guy was like, I am out of here. I don't want to deal with any of it. So I'm done. Which I always respected.
I respect that big time. My friend who's on this podcast, saw Nick Turner, one time they were like, you need to come in. And he goes, are you going to fire me? And they go, I don't know. He goes, fuck this. I'm not coming in to get fired. I'm done. I'm obviously fired. I'm done.
He was for sure fired. Yeah. And he just didn't want, like, Rick Pitino did lose his shit later, I heard. So I was like, he just didn't want to have his shit. You know, he didn't want him to lose his shit on him. Like an NBA coach. He, like, who has gotten shadier over the years to the point where you're like, this guy is out of his mind. Wow. The decision ages like a Merlot. It's fantastic.
Exactly. Oh, Henry Zebrowski did a similar thing one time where they gave him a car to rent to go deep into Queens to try to sell some kosher magazine to like a Jewish deli, and he hated it so much he just went home and he's like, your car's there. I'm done. Yeah. He just left the car. Like,
I love it. Yeah. I don't think I have that in me. I really don't, but I love it. It's the greatest just to be like, fuck it.
Yeah. This isn't working. And I don't feel like I'm closer to my house than to you to quit. So I'm
Just that it's the gumption. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you live there long enough, you make this money, and then why do you want to move to LA? Like, you're like, I'm funny. Are you doing stand-up in Boston at this time? Cause I mean, that's a great stand-up scene.
I tried 2 times in Boston, and I mean, I don't know what your start was, but man, I couldn't handle how hard I was eating shit the first few times I did it. So it took me 4 or 5 real eat shit periods before I was like, I'm going to eat this shit and get through it. I would just bomb there.
Well, I was so young. I was 19 and in Iowa. So they were like, this guy isn't racist or homophobic.
Who is this?
Incredible. So it went well. It was easy to start in Iowa. Okay. So you live there and then you decide to come to LA to be an actor or what?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd gone to Emerson to study theater. So I was in like a BFA acting program. It was super intense, but really the thing that I really did enjoy it and felt like I was getting a lot out of it from like an acting standpoint. I just didn't realize how useless that would be. The writing and performing sketches and thing, that element. And I'd met my writing partner who I still work with to this day, you know, right away at Emerson. And so we'd started writing a lot of stuff and performing a lot of stuff. And that was really tickling my fancy more than the acting. But the plan, what my plan in my head was like, I'll go to LA, I'll probably get on a show in 3 years. And then that'll really start the ball rolling. And that was really how I viewed it, I was like, this will not be that hard.
To be honest, it's kind of how you have to. You know what I mean? Like,
Very true.
If you thought realistically,
oh, God,
no, I'm in a valet and I'm going to make fucking money and this is great. But if you have the correct amount of delusion, you can move here.
Yes. And that's very well put. That is exactly what I did. I didn't really know much other than, you know, I was young and I was just like, let's fucking go.
Well, also, I think the other thing that you had the correct amount of delusion, which isn't insanity, is like insanity is like, I'm going to move there next month. I'm going to be on a TV show. Delusion is I'm going to move there in 3 years. I'll be on a TV.
Yeah. In my head, I probably thought two, but yeah. I was like, it could be really bad. So it could be three. Yeah. You know, and then the truth is that probably in year two, maybe I was like almost on a show. And so that only further deluded me. Like I only like then I was like, oh, yeah, like that should have been it. But it will be. I mean, you know what it's like when you get those calls when you're getting close to something on a show and they've negotiated your deal. And as they're negotiating your deal, you're not even going, this is money I'm not going to see. You're just going, are they saying $35,000 an episode? Mm-hmm. Like, and they're doing 10, you know, I mean, I was thinking that at like 25, like what the fuck?
Yeah, no, I've done a few pilots where I add up the math, you know, I was just saying you get a half season pickup.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I want. They don't even need to air.
Yeah.
They don't even have to air.
Oh God.
Yeah. But it was certainly like that. That was where my head was. I was like, this will be easy.
Right. Yes. So you come out here, you're doing all that. What are you doing for money when you're in LA besides auditioning and stuff? You getting more voiceover work and stuff or no?
No, I was not doing, the first couple things I did was I did a lot of test market stuff. I found the test market thing and I would literally basically you go and you would watch, I would watch like a VH1 pilot and then I would go, I liked it. I didn't like it. You know, evaluate it, give them your thoughts and fill it out. And then he'd give you a check for $75 that I would immediately give to my neighbor for weed because they would make it out to cash. But the real first job I had was I started dressing up like superheroes and costume characters for children's birthday parties.
Really? So, how does that even come into your orbit? Like how?
I mean, yes, I had no clue that was a job. And we started a sketch group and we started doing shows really quickly. And then so probably in the first couple months, a friend of mine's girlfriend came to a show and she was just like, I do princess birthday parties and I like do all this stuff and I work for this company. And if you need money, you know, you should do it. And then I just called the guy, met with the guy and, you know, he basically explained the job. You got to learn how to make balloon animals. You pick up these costumes, you go to these parties. They're an hour a party. I would get at the time, I think I would get like $50 a party. It was only weekends really. So I could basically do the things I wanted to do and pursue during the week. And then the weekends would be a total nightmare. But that was when she told me that job, I was like, wait, what?
This is crazy. So if you haven't pitched it, you should pitch it's party down, but you're all superheroes.
Yes. I have tried in a couple different ways. People tell me they hear this idea a lot, which I find crazy. And I don't, it is a very, when I think of how it worked, I mean, there was basically the one guy and then he had the seven employees. So it is very perfect for like some sort of show premise.
Yeah. Have you seen Party Down?
Yes. Love Party Down.
I love it so much. It just makes me think of that, you know?
Like, yeah. I think at one point we kind of pitched something like that. I mean, you know how it is. It's just like they're like, oh, we don't do that. And then they do it. Or they go, oh, it's all we do. And then they pass on your, it's just like, you're like, I don't fucking know anymore. Yeah. But I did it I did about 400 birthday parties. I took about a year or two off.
Whoa.
And I thought the whole time I was like, this is a show. I mean, this is totally a show.
So what superhero are you dressed as? Did you have a go-to? Did you have a favorite or?
I had a favorite. I mean, I would do anything. The only thing I said I wouldn't do, and it was a really weird writer request, but I put it in early and I was glad I did, was I wouldn't do clowns. I was like, the makeup, all that shit to me just seemed, it just, for me, I was like, I don't want to be a clown.
Right.
And so my favorite one was Spider-Man because the latex was very thin, so it wasn't like an overheating costume, which 80% of them were. Like, I was Darth Vader once in a bowling alley, and the AC was broken, and I was like, I'm going to die. I had to go outside. They give you this defogger for the mask, and so you got to spray this fucking shit. Just so you could see. I couldn't see. I mean, I was just like, it was, and I was outside just going, like, taking the thing off, just going, like, I probably looked like actual Darth Vader when I lifted it up. I was like,
it would have been so funny. Like, the kid's birthday, they saw Darth Vader have a panic attack.
Yeah. Like, he's a real, like, I think he misses his son. He has son issues, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He really misses his boy. But Spider-Man, your face would be covered, which was good because there were times where I would go to parties as the years went on. And I was at Principato Young for years. I saw Paul Young at a party and I was the Mr. Incredible. So it was like not cool. And then the best part was, of course, he didn't recognize me, which was his own like gutting experience. You know, and I was like, but Paul, but Spider-Man light spandex masked up pretty good. Pretty kids loved it. Pretty simple.
Any kids attack you at all?
Yes, many, many times. Yes, many, many situations where I thought this can't be happening to me. When I was Santa, some bigger kids, you know, sometimes you would be around like slower adults. And there was a time where I was Santa where an older child was like, really had like where they were like Barry, 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 and I was like, well, that's not good to hear. I'm like sternly shouting at this guy whose muscles I'm so like fucking hey. The pulling on the tail, the kicking, just the jet. There would be times you didn't know what you were showing up to. You would just, you know, that you'd have a worksheet and it would kind of give you an overview, but then you'd show like I remember being Scooby Doo when a kid was turning 12. And it was like his 12-year-old friends. And I was like, why the fuck? And all they were doing was like, why did my mom get this? Like, they were just like more horrible to me. And I was just going in my head. I'm like, we agree on the why the fuck was I ordered? Why did you order me? You know, but there was tons of that. It, you know, when I was a kid and I would go to Chuck E. Cheese and stuff, I would fuck with them. And so it was very full circle reality crushing when I would be like, where is he? Stop grabbing the tail. You know, like seriously be like, enough. Like be like Sully from Monsters, Inc. And be like, don't you grab my tail. Like just not in character anymore. Just like a struggling actor losing his mind.
God damn it. This is great. I like how you're like, I valet cars. Did he wreck? Oh, all the time. I was a child. Were the child mean? Always. Yes.
Always. Always. It's always been hell.
Dude, that's incredible. So then like what transitions to like you starting to do more comedy out here? Were you always doing improv with everybody?
Yeah, I was doing a lot of sketch and improv, and I was the Improv Olympic was kind of the place where I'd kind of nestled in. And and my writing partner and I started to get certain deals. We got a really weird gig writing ads, like ad options for this company. I don't even really remember how it happened, but so we did a bunch of that. And then through that, we'd pitched this idea for Axe body spray. And then Axe came back and was like, we made a video because we had like, we were like, they should do like a late night infomercial. And so we just made a video of what it would be like. And then they were like, we want to hire these two guys. So they hired us for a year. We got put under a year deal to go make video content on meeting girls. And, it really was a huge marketing undertaking. If you watched it, you would be like, this did not cost this much money, but they put a lot of money into it to make it look like shit, which was pretty foolish in retrospect, but it was a great job. And it was really, and it was the first time when I was like, I'm sure you've had this experience where, you know, people who are experienced are going to you, this is going to turn you into something. Like you are going to be this. So I was getting a lot of that, and I was going. Oh,
were you in a lot of Axe body spray ads? Like what?
No, it was its own website. So it was just a website where Evan, my writing partner, and I, we just went to like seven different cities for a week. I mean, it's an unbelievable job, and we were on the road for other times too. We'd be doing other things, but we would just go and film content, just short videos, just super, like in a way it was very ahead of its time, but because it was from a marketing company, they were terrible enough to kind of ruin that by, you know, overproducing and things like that. But that job lasted, it was a year contract and it was like insanely good pay. And so I was like, oh, this is it. I've arrived. And then like 2 years later, just had nothing to show for it. Right. So it was one of those where I got this thing early and thought, oh yeah, this is not the end. This is the start. And I don't need to watch my money. Fuck that. I'm going to be huge. That's what all those people said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My version of that was SNL, where I was just like, well, I'm a billionaire now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to buy everything. 1 year later, I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. The amount of meals I bought for friends and shots for strangers and just stuff where I was like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
And then of course I had to go back to kids' parties. And then I had to add, it's because I had the good year, I moved out from living with my roommate. I got my own place. It wasn't too expensive or anything, but it was still like all the internet and, you know, all the bills were now mine. So it did accumulate. And then, so not only did I have to go back to kids' birthday parties, but then I had to add working construction for my brother during the week to make ends meet. And that went on. I mean, that was really my low point in my career for sure.
Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, construction, I've talked about it many times in here. I only did it for like 2 months before I was like, but I was 18. I was like, I can't do this. I cannot do this.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal. It was my brother's company that he'd started. We'd painted houses together for a little bit, and then he kind of branched out, and then I was away from that work. And then when I went back, and I would be doing the gruntiest of grunt labor. Like I would be doing like, you know, the dump runs or the grout mixing and shit like that. So it was truly a humbling time.
Yeah. So what happens that you get it back on track? Were you just like, okay, fuck, I like got a little sidetracked with that money. I need to like, you know, refocus or what?
Actually, very quickly off of the Axe thing, we got a Comedy Central pilot. I forgot that. And that was big budget, got passed on. And I was tiling a wall when it got passed on. Mm-hmm. And I was watching the tiles slowly slide down the wall. And I was realizing like, I'm so fucked.
Yeah.
I think what happened was some version of that. We had a thing with MTV that was being negotiated and it just took forever. So I knew about a year into it, like there is a thing coming that will help as soon as I can get paid for it. It just took so long to get it moving and to get money for it. But yeah, I think the walkaway lesson from that experience where I was frivolous was that, first of all, hold on to your money. But second of all, don't ever listen to other people about what is going to happen to you in this business because nobody knows shit. I just was around people who I thought knew things. And so, you know, it's the same thing. You have to do it, I think, probably throughout your career, unless you're like The Rock, where you just put the blinders on and you go, yeah, I'm good, but doesn't matter. I mean, you know, it's given me the ability to just kind of like, you know, not really pay too much attention to the things I'm doing and just kind of focus on trying to be a regular person and not like, I mean, in the sense of like not blow your money and not believe bullshit, just, you know, do your work and get through your
right
work.
Yeah. And be like present and not like looking forward. That's what I like.
Yeah, totally.
Hey man, like, at first I'm like, this is all fine, whatever, I don't care. Like movies are next, but like, I should have really just been enjoying being on TV. Cause that's not always going to happen.
Yeah, it's true, man. I mean, you know, I think when you look back, that is one of the things is you just kind of go, I've done a lot of cool things. And so appreciating them when they're going on instead of not is important too, to say, you know, I don't have a consistent job. I don't have whatever, but I'm here doing this. And there's not anyone I went to high school with who's doing that.
Right. I mean, like sometimes I have like this, the Steve Martin book. I'm not crazy about Steve Martin. I like, you know, but I thought that the comedy book is really good. And I like leap through it every once in a while because it is like re-motivating. And he had like this thing in it where he said like, it's okay to like take like moments of joy and small victories. You know, like it's okay to sometimes be like, you know, I'm going to be happy today, even though like, you know, I sell a show. Like, I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Today, I know it probably won't ever go to series, but I don't give a fuck. I did a thing. I'm going to be happy about it today.
Yeah, it really is true. As well as like, I have moments where I go, oh man, this is fucking really lining up nice. And I don't believe the hype too much, but I'm like that. I have times where I go, man, everything's falling apart. Everything's fucked. And I don't dip too deeply into that side either. You have to find a way to like, just all in a week. And I don't think it's like this with most industries or businesses, but everything can change in a day. And normally it does within 2 weeks or a month. There's something to look forward to. There's something to work towards. Right. There's something you can be putting yourself in the position for. So yeah, I mean, not going, fuck, I made it. And also not going like, I'm a loser. Like,
right. the middle ground is huge. Yeah. Okay. So what leads to you being able to leave construction and birthday parties?
Well, I got our MTV pilot.
Okay. What was that show?
It was called Evan and Gareth Save the World.
Okay.
And it was just like, it was like a response to our Comedy Central pilot that we didn't really like. We made that and we were like, I mean, it was, you know, one of those situations where they're going, man, did that kill at the screening? Ooh, is this testing well?
What year? Because MTV has different, you know, generations.
This would probably be around 2010-ish, I would say.
Okay, so they're like, you know, we got the Teen Moms going on, but Jackass isn't like forgettable. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The world's still happy. I mean, MTV's still in the like, they're still like right now, MTV, I couldn't tell you what's on it, but like 2010, like
some stuff.
There's fucking Viva La Bam, like cool shit, like still happening.
And the people who were running their comedy department were fucking awesome. Like Brooke Posh, you know, has gone on to do a ton of stuff. And she's awesome. And she at the time, like, she basically took a rider on us. She was like, I want to make this pilot. And so she made our pilot. And it's, you know, doing great and all this stuff. And then Tony DeSantos, who is the charge, left. And then so that went to shit. Mm-hmm. But shortly thereafter, we got an opportunity to make a Travel Channel show pilot. We made that. And then that got picked up to series. And then so that was really when I was like, okay, now I feel breathing room. Now I have consistent work and I probably know how to handle this all a little better. And that was sort of when I felt like I was coming out of the construction birthday party gig. Finally, I had to go back to the birthday parties two different times after long breaks. And it really was, you know, tough. It was very tough. It's very tough to go back to the Walgreens parking lot, meet the guy who would give me the costumes and have the guy be like, I knew you'd be back. And I was like, this is just fucking crazy, man. I was like, I can't handle this shit. The first party back one time I was Batman. I was in the Adam West Batman suit. And I was just sitting in my car, just like tearing up, just like, fuck, man. I was like, I seriously had said, shut this fucking chapter. And here I am, you know?
Dude, that's insane. I mean, first of all, nice that you had a job that you could go back to. But second of all, what a terrible job to have to go back to.
It really was. I mean, it's one of those jobs where the first 2 months I was like, this is a joke. I love it. And then like once I was 3 or 4 years in, I was like, you know, it's like Bill Hicks. Like, how am I going to get through this shit one more time with a smile on my face? Like, I don't know how this is going to happen. You know,
and then we'll scoot out of here. How did how'd the dollop ended up coming together? Because I love Dave. And like, how did that? Because I mean, that thing is freaking huge. You guys tour all over the world.
Yeah, it's. I just like anything else, it's so fucking random. I mean, I started doing, so eventually I started realizing improv was not popular and, I went, okay, I've got to get into stand-up.
Yeah. You got to graduate improv. I think around 28, 29.
Right around when I was starting to get the itch to be like, this is probably not the best. Started doing stand-up, and then that led me to meet Sam Tripoli, who became a buddy of mine. And I did his podcast for a while. It was just like his guest, you know, his co-host or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Dave came on the show and Dave and I really hit it off. And then I, you know, I just said like, hey, he had another podcast called Walk in the Room that was pretty popular. And I was like, hey, you know, I'd love to do that podcast. And he was like, yeah, I want to have you. Took about 2 years. 2 years later, he messages me and says, you know, will you co-host this week? I said, yeah, went in. We loved it. And then he had the idea. So the second or third time I went around to fill in for his co-host, He goes, no, we're not going to do the other one today. We're going to do this different one. It's called The Dollop, but it's this. And I said, okay. And he's like, I'm going to rotate comedians. And I go, great. I'd love to be on the first one. And we just did it. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, it was his. So it wasn't like, I was like, we got something here, man.
Yeah.
But he basically said, like, that, you know, that people are reacting strongly. Why don't you do the next one? And then I did the next couple. And then he was like, this is just how it's going to be.
Dope. Then you're fucking in Australia telling Australians about Australian history. And that's awesome.
I mean, it truly is like the thing where, you know, you're just going, yeah, it's just, you know, it was fucking nuts. It was like, there was a thing. There was a thing that where I was like, there's a thing.
That's dope. Yeah. Oh man, Gareth. Well, thanks a bunch for doing the pod. Anything else you want to plug besides Dollop or any other podcasts?
Not really. I'll be in Hawaii on May 31st, my first show back since quarantine.
That's a good one. Where are you playing?
In Maui at a place called De Playa.
Ooh, I never performed in Maui. I've done Honolulu a couple times.
Really. I've never been to Hawaii. I thought I'd been to Hawaii till I was like 26. And my mother was in town in LA and she was talking to some of my friends and she was, one of them had been to Hawaii. And, oh, Hawaii must be lovely. And I said, oh, I love Hawaii. And she goes, when did you go? And I go, when we were like six. She goes, that was Fort Lauderdale. And I was like, oh, I've been telling people for 28 years I went to Hawaii.
Oh my God. This is I had a similar, not a similar thing, but like my great grandma lived in Mexico, Missouri. And I lived in Iowa and I went back to school confidently for years, explaining that I went to Mexico that summer and my grandma's Mexican.
Like, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. Legally, not wrong.
And also Mexico, Missouri is right next to Paris, Missouri.
What are they doing there? That's not okay.
I don't know. But as a fucking 7-year-old, you're like, well, we are having the Whelans are having a summer again.
You want to do Paris or Mexico tomorrow? What's everyone feeling?
Yeah. We would go get Long John Silver's in Paris and then we'll bring it back to Mexico because my great grandma Biba loves Long John Silver's. It's insane. Yeah. And then like in fifth grade, I had to go to school and be like, I have been.
No.
Not necessarily lied to.
What?
I've been misbelieving things. Yeah.
What? Politicians don't need to retract things. And you in front of your class have to be like, I have misled you.
Yeah.
Paris and Mexico are in Missouri.
Yeah.
As in Sweden, apparently.
Yeah. Very, very confusing. Gareth, thanks so much for doing the podcast, man. And I know that you're a big fan of it. And you like, even though we don't have each other's phone numbers, you email me what you like each time. You take notes. It's really kind.
Always.
So since you always listen, that I always have our guest take us out.
Can I just say, and I'm sorry that some of those go on and on. I just, it flows through me. I don't know what to tell you.
I understand.
I will end the podcast by saying it is a pleasure. And one of the great things about social media, as it is a pit of despair and destruction, is being able to connect and meet with people who you like and have never really had a conversation with before. So it's a pleasure, Brooks, and thank you for having me.